Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Om Shivam Sabadarajikajaya. Astatarasata Sisimad. Asi Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Om Shivam Sabadarajikajaya. Stotarasata Sisimad Bhakti Siddhanta Sajidakur Prabhupada Ki. Go pray, Manandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 7, Further Inquiries by Vidura, Text 26. Uparyadraschaye loka, Bhumir mitra majasate, Tesham samstam pramanam cha, Bhurlokasya Chavarnaya Uparyadashtaye Loka Bhumir Mijhat Majasate Tesham Samstam Pramanam Cha Bhurlokasya Chavarnaya Uparyadashchaye loka Bhumir mitrat majasate Hesham samstam pramanam cha. Bhur lokasya chavarnaya. Vaishnavis, Upari, on the head. Aja, underneath. Cha, also. Ye, which. Loka, planets. Bhume, of the earth. Mitra Atmaja, O son of Mitra. Maitreya Muni. Asate, do exist. Tesham, there. Songstam, situation. Pramanam cha, also there, measurement. Bhulokasya, of the earthly planets. Cha, also. Varnaya, please describe. Translation. O son of Mitra, kindly describe how the planets are situated above the earth as well as underneath it. And also please mention their measurement as well as that of the earthly planets. Purport. Yasmin bigate sarvam evam bigatam bhavati. This Vedic hymn declares emphatically that the devotee of the Lord knows everything material and spiritual in relationship with the Lord. Devotees are not simply emotional, as is ill-conceived by certain less intelligent men. Their direction is practical. They know everything that is and all the details of the Lord's domination over the different creations. Translation again. O son of Mitra, kindly describe how the planets are situated above the earth as well as underneath it. And also please mention their measurement as well as that of the earthly planets. Om Aganachimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The idea, the notion that bhakti yogis, devotees, are very emotional and sentimental has been going on for a long, long time. Of course, you can look at Chaitanya Leela, and there you see the misunderstanding, the deep-set misunderstanding that the Mayavadi sannyasis in Varanasi had. Mahaprabhu was there. He was giving siksha to Sanatan Goswami, and you can read that section of Chaitanya Charitamrita where Mahaprabhu instructs Sanatan Goswami. And there were also devotees like Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar Acharya. They were there too. And it's interesting that Prabhupada in his purport says that Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar Acharya, who are certainly no ordinary personalities, he said they were acting like Kanishta Adhikaris in that they couldn't defeat the Mayavadi misperceptions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Srila Prabhupada explains that the Shastra says if there's blasphemy of a devotee, that you have three choices. You either are able to defeat the person, or you give up your life, or you leave immediately. So Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar Acharya were troubled that Mahaprabhu is basically the only Vaishnava sannyasi in Varanasi, a place loaded with all kinds of gyanis and mystic yogis, impersonalist sannyasis. Mahaprabhu was the only one, the only Vaishnav sannyasi there. And he was getting talked about. And this pained the heart of the devotees to have to hear that. And finally because they couldn't handle it themselves. And in this way, you can see that although they're special souls, they're, as Prabhupada said, acting like Kanishta Adhikaris. We can't defeat this. We don't know what to do about it. So they presented their pain to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who simply smiled. The explanation given that a devotee is not eager to defend himself or herself, but if a devotee hears about another devotee being attacked, then the devotee rallies and wants to do something about it. So the blasphemy, the offensive talk, the social media of that time, the city talk in Varanasi, was labeling Mahaprabhu as a sentimentalist and a fanatic. No one understood. What is all this chanting and dancing about? If he's a real sannyasi, he should be studying Vedanta and discussing what is Brahman, and he should demonstrate his expertise in Sanskrit and Sanskrit grammar. In other words, he should be living what we would call a very dry life. So, when Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar Acharya presented to Mahaprabhu, and as we said, Mahaprabhu simply smiled. Simultaneously, Chaitanya Charitamrita explains that by the Lord's omnipotence, by the Lord's arrangement, a brahmana came to invite Mahaprabhu to lunch. And the brahmana knew he was going to make a very unique request, because everyone in the whole city of Varanasi knew that Mahaprabhu doesn't hang out with Mayavadis. He doesn't associate with them. What to speak of taking lunch with them, which is a form of association. Those whom you eat with, you're actually bonding with. So the Brahmana made his request very cautiously and gently, and Mahaprabhu accepted. Why? Because of wanting, Mahaprabhu wanted to please his devotees. They were in anxiety. They were suffering. You can think of what that could be like if you've ever been around someone who's criticizing very acutely someone that's very dear to you. You can't handle it. What to speak of? Someone's insulting the Supreme Personality of Godhead and calling him an emotional, sentimental fanatic who's not really a real sannyasi, he's a faker. So, out of affection for his devotees only. That's an insight into this Chaitanya Leela that maybe we overlook sometimes. That Mahaprabhu, although on the one hand was like a strict as a thunderbolt, on the other hand, out of affection for his devotees, he could bend sometimes, but sometimes not, and we'll get into that later. So, he accepted the lunch invitation, and as you know, he showed up at the big gathering of the Mayavadi sannyasis, and he washed his feet and sat down in the very place where the foot washing was going on. And so all the Mayavadi sannyasis were a bit touched, like, Your Holiness, no need for you to sit in such an unclean place. Are you affected by some material lamentation, or what's going on? Why are you not acting, in other words, why are you not acting in an exalted manner like us? And then, of course, Mahaprabhu showed some mystic power. And this is interesting because, as we hear from Parampara, and as Srila Prabhupada, of course, explained to us in Parampara, that Vaishnavas, especially Vaishnavacharyas, don't like to show mystic power. They don't want persons becoming attracted to that and not understanding the potency of bhakti, the bhakti shakti. But in any case, these were hardcore Mayavadi sannyasis who had no respect, no fondness for bhakti. They thought it was inferior for those emotionalists who can't do the hardcore Vedanta studying and can't practice severe austerities. They allow their emotions to flow, and in that way, actually, the thought, the concoction is that the bhakti yogis are actually just doing fruitive activity, karmic activity, but nice karmic activity. Devotional service is maya, but a high form of maya, very high illusion that allows you to focus your consciousness in some way that will elevate you until you get to the point where you understand that there's just Brahman, there's no variety, there's no individuality. So bhakti is looked down upon as like a lower stepping stone that gets you higher in terms of material activity, and then one day you'll be qualified to realize the oneness. So they looked upon Lord Chaitanya in that way. So why Mahaprabhu demonstrated mystic power? He revealed, because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, he revealed an effulgence more brighter than millions of suns. You can just think what it would have been like to witness that. He did such a thing, obviously, to get through to these hardcore, hard-headed, and very dry Mayavadi sannyasis. So they saw that. And so, well, we all know we're Narayan. At least we're trying to revive our Narayanhood. But he looks like he's already Narayan. Okay. He's there where we want to be. That was their reaction. So Prakashananda Saraswati put it straight to Mahaprabhu. Why are you associating with fanatics going around chanting and dancing? Even today, the chanting and dancing is often misunderstood. Doesn't mean we stop it, but because the misunderstanding has been going on since time immemorial. But people think, how is that yoga? How is that meditation? Just dancing in ecstasy. But chanting and dancing, and we're particularly talking about the dancing, is a part of Mahaprabhu's mission. And Srila Prabhupada always emphasized that. The chanting, the dancing, the taking prasad, the hearing of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. But the Mayavadi sannyasis considered this chanting and dancing to be unbecoming of a real sannyasi. Mahaprabhu, knowing their prejudgment, sat in a lowly place. And they asked him, why are you sitting there? You have some, as I said, you have some material affliction, which you shouldn't have as a real sannyasi. You should be fixed in Brahman beyond happiness and distress. But anyway, it looks like you have some material problem. And Mahaprabhu told them, I belong to a lower sannyas order, as you see it. Of course, he's the supreme renouncer. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. But this is his preaching strategy, including the demonstration of an effulgence more powerful than millions of suns. This is not the only time that Vaishnavas have been misperceived. Look at the case of Madhavendra Puri when he was about to leave this world. And he's lamenting transcendentally. Oh, I could not attain Mathura. Oh, he's lamenting in ecstatic love of Krishna. He's demonstrating love of Krishna in separation. He's not showing any mundane emotion. But his faulty disciple, Ramachandra Puri, took it in that way. Whereas his glorious disciple, Ishwar Puri, took it another way. So Ramachandra Puri, while his guru is lamenting an ecstatic separation from Krishna, because the seed of ecstatic love appeared with Madhavendra Puri and then sprouted as the tree, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes devotees ask, where did Madhavendra Puri get it from if it wasn't present? Ecstatic love in its confidential Madhurya aspects. If it wasn't present before him. And the acharyas explain that he was enlightened through the heart because he appeared before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So through his heart, the seed of ecstatic love was planted in terms of Madhurya, and then that seed sprouted as the tree of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, with the mercy of Ishwar Puri. So here is Madhavendra Puri lamenting in the purest and deepest ecstatic love. I couldn't attain Mathura. I remember Prabhupada explaining what love of separation is like, so much so that even someone like George Harrison caught it a bit. He caught what Prabhupada was meaning. Prabhupada explained that you're in the sunshine, the sun is shining brightly, and then suddenly the sun disappears from the sky because clouds cover it. What do you feel? What do you feel then? And everyone replied, cold. And Brahma said, no, you feel the absence of the sun, separation from the sun. So then the devotees, hearing this, caught it. That there's the sun, and then there's the feeling of the absence of the sun. And both are consciousness of the sun. Similarly, there is consciousness of Krishna's presence, and there's also consciousness of Krishna's absence. Both are Krishna conscious, but the acharyas tell us that the consciousness of separation from Krishna is most intense, and actually, defying our material logic and reason, actually brings us the most dynamic presence of Krishna through feelings of separation. So I remember being I was on Sankirtan, this is sometime, 74, maybe 75, and this is when the Sankirtan devotees would always do the big concerts. This is the time of the big concerts when 25,000 young people would fill an arena to hear some musician. And so we would do Sankirtan all day, starting 9 a.m. in the morning, and then you go through to 9 p.m. at night, because that's when the malls would close in the New York area on Friday and Saturday. So you do 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. You guys got it easy these days. And then what? 9 p.m. go back to the temple? No, Archana Prabhu remembers. You head to the Madison Square Garden, Nassau Coliseum, and do the concerts. So there you are. You're distributing to people, young people entering the concert, and then you've got your ticket. You get in, and you bring books in, and you head. This is before the music starts. You head straight for the huge bathrooms in these arenas. And you wait outside the bathroom door, and as the men are, coming to relieve themselves, and then you get really enthusiastic, and you go inside the bathrooms as the men are approaching the urinals. Those were the days. And then, of course, the concert starts, and you're doing the aisles. You're going up and down the aisles, approaching the persons who are seated on the aisles, because you can't really wade into the rows. It's just too tight. So we were at a George Harrison concert in Providence, Rhode Island, in a big arena. And he was there with Ravi Shankar. And he announced, now I'm going to do a song called I Miss You, Lord Krishna, Where Are You? It turns out these lyrics were inspired by Prabhupada when George came to see him in London. And so he announced that, and I immediately and the other distributors knew what to do. We raced for our book boxes, which were stashed somewhere in the arena, loaded up. I loaded up with 50 Krishna books. And as soon as George finished the song, I Miss You, Lord Krishna, Where Are You? I yelled out, Krishna books, Krishna books, and a wave of people swarmed toward me. 100 persons just jumped out of their seats, running towards me with money in their hand. In 2 minutes, I distributed 50 Krishna books. So this was the power of Prabhupada explaining in such a potent example what love of Krishna and separation is like, that even George Harrison, who was not a fully practicing devotee, even he caught it. So then I remember being during the communist bloc days, very severe times. I was meeting some devotees from all over the Soviet bloc in Prague, what was then Czechoslovakia, and they had traveled by train 14 hours just to do what? We couldn't meet anywhere. We couldn't meet in hotels. The hotels are all bugged. So I just rented a car, and we found a lonely street, and we just sat in the car and talked about Krishna and chanted Hare Krishna. That's what they traveled 14 hours by train for. But they were so happy. Oh, we can hear about Krishna. So there we were in this big parked car on a lonely street. And I was speaking about love of Krishna and separation and using Prabhupada's example about the sun is shining brightly in the sky. And yes, right above us in the sky at that time, the sun in Prague was shining so brightly. And then all of a sudden, the sun disappeared. As I was explaining Prabhupada's example, what do you feel when the sun is gone? You don't feel cold. You feel the absence of the sun. And all the devotees got it. They were like, wow. Krishna was merciful to them because of their austerities, because of their self-sacrifice in preaching. They caught Prabhupada's example like that. It was like a mega moment for them. It made the whole 14-hour journey there on trains and 14-hour journey back on trains, it made it all worthwhile. So here we have Madhavendra Puri. He's about to leave his body. And Ramachandra Puri is trying to give him the worst advice. Ramachandra Puri says, what about, I thought you were full of Purna Brahmananda. You were full of the bliss of Brahman. But now I see you're lamenting, material lamentation. What is this? You shouldn't be talking like this. You should be focusing on Brahman. He was instructing his guru. And of course, what was Madhavendra Puri's reaction? Oh my goodness. I couldn't attain Mathura. And even worse, I have a so-called disciple like this who's telling me to think of Brahman. It doesn't get any worse. And he told Ramachandra Puri, just get out of here, you rascal. I don't want to see your face anymore. So this shows how the transcendental emotions of an advanced Vaishnava can be misunderstood. His own disciple, Madhavendra Puri's own disciple, couldn't catch what was going on. He was seeing such an exquisite moment of topmost Krishna Prem. But because of his Ramachandra Puri's materialistic vision, he didn't understand what was going on. Meanwhile, as you know, Ishwar Puri got all the mercy by rendering menial service to Madhavendra Puri as Madhavendra Puri was about to depart. And then, in the ninth canto, you have Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa. You know what happened, how Durvasa attacked Ambarish with his mystic power because he thought Ambarish had insulted him by drinking water before Durvasa Muni and his associates would lunch. It was a codicy situation. And anyway, you know that history. But what is significant for us today in this discussion is that Durvasa Muni had an attitude about bhakti yogis, especially when they're not having the external trappings of a sadhu or a mystic yogi, as Durvasa Muni certainly had. He was thinking, this Ambarish is a king. He's totally absorbed in worldly affairs. I am the great mystic yogi. How dare that he drinks water, breaking the fast, without waiting for me. Who is he? And actually, Srila Prabhupada says that Durvasa Muni was envious of him. This Ambarish gets so much acclaim. He gets so much applause. And what is he? He's just a householder. He's a king. He's absorbed in mundane affairs. What about me? I am the great Durvasa Muni. And he has insulted me. So you know how this history wound up with Durvasa Muni being chased by the Sudarshan Chakra. And the only way to get relief from the heat of the Sudarshan Chakra that was chasing him all over the universe and scorching his back, the only way to get relief was that Durvasa Muni had to approach Ambarish Maharaj, which he finally did. After going to so many great personalities like Brahma, even Lord Narayan, they all told him, Sorry, we can't do anything for you. You have to approach Ambarish Maharaj. So when Durvasa Muni did that, Ambarish Maharaj offered prayers to the Sudarshan Chakra. And this so touched Durvasa Muni. I tried to kill you, and here you are praying for my welfare. At that moment, Durvasa Muni understood the superiority of the Bhakti Yogi. That in spite of Durvasa Muni's great mystic powers, actually Ambarish was more mystical and more powerful by his dependency on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Ambarish himself, Prabhupada tells us, Ambarish himself realized that. Actually, I don't have any power, but I've become most powerful, but the power's not mine. Look what the Sudarshan Chakra did. I didn't know that I had access to such powers, but those powers are certainly not me. So Ambarish Maharaj was quite... He had such a profound experience. So, in other words, you can think that he would say something like, well, this bhakti, this Vaishnavism has more power than I thought. And Durvasa Muni is certainly the one who has the major lesson that I thought he was just an ordinary grihastha king absorbed in worldly affairs. I thought I was the big metaphysical expert, the great mystic power expert. And just see what happened. So this shows you another example of misunderstanding bhakti yogis as just being emotional, sentimentalists. So the history ends by Durvasa Muni eating and then inviting Ambarish Maharaj. Now you also please eat. You've been waiting a year until I return. You haven't eaten anything. Now you also eat. So as the Bhagavatam explains, they parted in bhakti yoga friendship. And where did Durvasa Muni go? He went to Brahmaloka. Why? He wanted to tell all the mystic yogis and Brahmavadis and all those extraordinary personalities gathered on Brahmaloka. He wanted to inform them. Nothing compares to bhakti. I've seen it. Don't misunderstand bhakti yoga. So in this way, Durvasa Muni learned his lesson about how even a king absorbed in family affairs and governmental affairs externally can still be the greatest devotee. So therefore, when we read that devotees are not simply emotional, as is ill-conceived by certain less intelligent men. We should know this is always going on. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu underwent such criticism or misperceptions, and we can also, because it's not easy to understand, especially a most advanced devotee. This is something pointed out in the 23rd chapter of Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Even the greatest scholar, the most materially learned person, can't understand the mind of a pure devotee of the Lord. Sometimes we puzzle over statements by Prabhupada. Why did he say this? Why did he say that? But we always have to preface such inquisitiveness with understanding who are we dealing with and who are we. Rather than just roar down the freeway and, okay, look at the statement and, well, it is this and it is that and the other. We have to understand who we're dealing with here. An example of this in Chaitanya Lila is the chastisement of Junya Haridas. The devotees couldn't understand it. Mahaprabhu's associates were stunned. Like, why is he being banished? just for what may be a minor infraction. Why is he being cut off from Mahaprabhu's association? No one could understand it. Devotees went to Mahaprabhu and they appealed on Juna Haridas's behalf. And what did Mahaprabhu say? You keep it up like this and I'm leaving. So that was the worst thing for the devotees to hear. They just covered their ears. They didn't want such a sound vibration to enter their ears. Mahaprabhu leaving. It was too painful for them. So they all just covered their ears and exited. But they went to Paramananda Puri, who was senior to Mahaprabhu in terms of disciplic succession. And so Paramananda Puri went to Mahaprabhu alone to make an appeal. And so he entered Mahaprabhu's presence, and Mahaprabhu said, "Yes, my lord." After Mahaprabhu offered obeisances to him, because that's his senior. And Paramananda Puri said, "This affair about Junior Haridas, the devotees are very disturbed. Please show him mercy." And Mahaprabhu said, "I guess you all want me to leave," and started making arrangements with his servant Govinda. "Let's, whatever little possessions we have, pack them up. We're going to Alalanath. We're leaving everyone. They won't see us anymore." So Paramananda Puri had to backtrack very quickly. And please, he said to Mahaprabhu, "Sit down, please. Let's not jump to such a conclusion." And then Paramananda Puri told him, "Actually, I know that everything you do is for the, and everything you say is for the benefit of the whole world. Moreover, your intentions are so deep and grave that we cannot, that they're not always understood. That's the basic reality." So similarly, when you're dealing with extraordinary personalities, you can try to apply, as they say, ISKCON hermeneutics. Go ahead, but always precede such an analysis by understanding that I'm dealing with a personality whose every word and deed is for the benefit of the whole world, and the intentions sometimes are so deep and so grave that I may not be able to grasp it all. Rather than, "Yeah, well, it says this, I can understand it. I've got my degrees and, yeah, case closed." Paramananda Puri himself, who's so senior that Mahaprabhu calls him Lord, he says, "We can't understand everything you do." So that's why Chaitanya Charitamrita says that even the most learned scholar can't understand the behavior and words of someone who has Krishna Prem embedded in his heart. All right, any questions? Hare Krishna. Okay, I'm off the hook, huh? Yes, you came all the way from Long Beach, so you get to ask a question. Do we have a mic? Is it?
Sometimes when you see these really hard to understand examples, it can be confusing as you're trying to learn your own proper behavior, what to follow versus what not to follow. And so I guess I was just curious as to I think that's why like the hermeneutics or the attempt to understand is there, at least in some situations. And so how do you differentiate?
Well, let me be clear. I've gone through the official ISKCON hermeneutics course, and they emphasize that before you start trying to understand something that, for example, Prabhupada said that may blow your mind, look at yourself first. Do you have good sadhana? What's your attitude? What kind of prejudices and biases are you bringing to the table in your looking at the statement? What assumptions do you have unconsciously? To that, I would add that when you're dealing with someone who's in ecstatic love for Krishna, you have to take into account that you may not be able to get to the bottom of it. Just like Paramananda Puri, who's an eternally liberated soul, told Mahaprabhu, we can't understand everything you say or do, but we know everything you say, everything you do is for the benefit of the whole world. I hope that answered your question. We have Amala Bhakta Maharaj with a comment.
Thank you for a wonderful class. What I wanted to have you describe is the glory and the greatness of King Ambarish in terms of his bhakti acquirements as a result of his bhakti disciplines. He's not just a king. He was a king who was highly, greatly advanced in spiritual knowledge. And perhaps you can let us know what are some of the things he did to gain that advanced spiritual knowledge and enabled him to actually see that, yes, he was highly more advanced than Durvasa, but he never took that position that he was more advanced. He let Krishna show it by his dependence upon Krishna, who then showed Durvasa Muni how small he was next to the great king.
You said it all yourself, thank you. Sachin Chinoy Prabhu.
Famous statement in Chaitanya Charitamrita that two Vaishnavas having a conversation, and one of them, I think it's Sanatana Goswami and Haridas Thakur, is praising one. He says, my dear Lord, some devotees preach, but they don't behave good. He says, some other ones, they might not behave. What is the other? But don't preach. Some behave good, but they don't preach. So, but you, my dear Lord, you have both things. So therefore, you're like Paramahansa. So sometimes in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we see we're not many Paramahansas. We're in the median state trying to be devotees. And they expect to see the top leaders to behave properly so they can make advancement. And the other side, the top leaders, they might look after the younger devotees. They should behave properly. So what will be the balance in that regard?
Whenever I come to New Dwarka and I see how, led by Swavas Prabhu, devotees like you stick so closely to the basics, that helps to resolve all controversies. How faithfully a core of you come for the morning program and a core of you are going on distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. A core of you are preparing dazzling prasad for the festivals you have here. That resolves all these ongoing issues that Srila Prabhupada himself had to face during his time. I can tell you about New Dwarka in the 70s. You had a solid core of book distributors, BBT persons, but then there were hundreds of devotees in this area. And so much so, the rest of the world called Los Angeles, Loose Angeles. And then Watsika Avenue was known as Watsika. No one had a Sika. So even during Prabhupada's time, there are all these different levels of devotees and various controversies. But I've seen over the years, over the decades, that when there's a solid core that just keeps to the basic fundamentals, the Krishna consciousness movement goes on. Prabhupada he showed that he could take contributions, he could take service and engage in service, so many variegated types. Sometimes he was very firm and sometimes very soft. So, my conclusion is that to push on the Krishna conscious movement, you need intelligence directly coming from Krishna. Because to resolve all these issues, you can look back and wonder, how did Prabhupada do it? Sometimes he was firm. No, this person can't do that. Sometimes very soft. This person has done so much service. I remember an example, a BBT example in Mumbai. The BBT books were stored in what they call in India, a godown. And the door was locked so that proper accounting could be done of all the books distributed and who owed what. But Garga Muni Maharaj broke into the godown and just took whatever he wanted. He felt a sense of entitlement. And so devotees went to Prabhupada and complained, you know, we're trying to have a tidy BBT operation. You have to get permission to go into the godown and take books, and everything's properly recorded. And Garga Muni Maharaj just smashes the door and takes what he wants. And Prabhupada said, just let him be. He did so much service for me from the very beginning. So there's that side also. So how to have a heart and at the same time how to be strict. There are many different opinions. But as I said, when we look at the core team you have here in New Dwarka, Bhrigupati Prabhu, my old Sankirtan partner from the 70s in New York, still going on. This resolves so many paradoxes and controversies. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.